The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only.
Go live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. It is Wednesday, March 24th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome for the next 60 minutes of news talk, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're here every weekday, 1 p.m. Pacific, with replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9. Joining me to my left, our engineer, the maestro, Ganja John. John, you're back from Southern Oregon down Roseburg Way. How's it going? Got to turn the mic on.
It's going good.
Oh. You're listening to Normal Show Live.
Turn that off,
the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
And joining us in our virtual studio from Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and half sister, Cannabis Carrie. Carrie, you're having too much fun in Astoria.
You guys are having a good time in there.
Oh, yeah. We're turning off the fax machine and getting the sound clips to work perfectly. It's all going well here.
No, I was
going to say it's all John's fault. He came back from Southern Oregon with some special goodness. Anyway, Carrie brings us our headlines right after the first break here. So what are we looking forward to today, Carrie?
Well, Russ, today in the news, we're going to cover both the East and the West Coast, as both New York and California have made some great strides in cannabis law reform this week.
All right, both coasts. We'll be taking a look at that. We've also got a story coming up here at the end of the show about the National Football League, which is a great subject for me to cover. I love talking football, so we'll get to that at the end. Of course, today is our Cannabis Science Day. Every Wednesday, Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us. He's a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. He also writes the Ask Dr. Mitch column in High Times magazine. So we'll be discussing post-traumatic stress disorder today, as well as some new information on the effectiveness of vaporization. Plus, we'll take your questions in the chat room. Ask your live questions at the bottom of the hour, 30 after, and we will get those to Dr. Mitch and ask for you, and you can get your answers immediately. You can ask him anything you want about history, culture, science, medicine, anything you'd like about marijuana. Also today, for our Daily Toker Tunes at 20 after, we are going down to Iowa to visit with Johnny Reeferseed. He will be bringing us a great tune for our Iree Wednesday today. All that and more coming up here on Normal Show Live. We are the voice of the Marijuana Nation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint cancer? Would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it. Well, lie to don't hide it. Lie to don't hide it. Just lie to don't hide it.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Today is a landmark day for California cannabis law reform activists. Signatures from LA County will be handed in today and will likely provide more than enough ballot signatures to put recreational cannabis use on the ballot in November. Advocates only needed 15,000 signatures to be handed in today from L.A. County to put them over the top, and the 434,000 signatures overall to qualify for the ballot. The raw count of signatures handed in so far is 694,248. After today, the 10-page initiative is expected to be on the fall ballot and put to the voters of the state of California. If passed, anyone over 21 will be allowed to possess, share, and transport up to 1 ounce of marijuana for personal use and maintain a 25-square-foot garden of cannabis as well. It would be up to local governments to authorize cultivation, transportation, and sales, and then impose taxes. Advocates say the outcome of the initiative will probably come down to the undecideds, women in their 30s and 40s with children. Nationwide, cannabis activists can now cheer that one state for sure will let voters decide if they want to legalize come November. Now we will wait and see if there will be cheering on Nevada and Washington State as well this fall, as both of those states are still working on getting measures to the voters in 2010.
Oh, it's such good news to hear that California is going to be voting on this. We discussed this a little bit yesterday. We talked about the meeting that they're having up in Humboldt County for some of the people in the Emerald Triangle, discussing how the Northern California economy could be crippled by marijuana legalization by dropping the prices that these growers are getting by half. And, you know, I also think about, you know, when California votes on this, and let's say they do pass this, and I do believe there's a good chance it'll pass. What happens with the states that surround California? You know, every time I drive into California, I have to do the little fruit stand inspection, you know, that you go through the little fruit thing. And they, do you have any fruit? No, we don't have any fruit. So what's it going to be like leaving California now? Are they going to be bud inspectors to make sure you're not taking bud across the state lines? And boy, imagine what it's going to be like in the border cities as well. I'm thinking Eureka, California up there, you know, right near Southern Oregon. That would be a good place to start buying some land right about now. Maybe some of the Eastern California cities that are bordering on Nevada or Arizona might be a good place to open up a little business. That could be very interesting. The impact of this vote can't be overstated, though. You know, we can't overstate the fact that this state voting on marijuana legalization could desperately affect all the other states that are looking to do anything with regards to marijuana law reforms. You know, and I do worry about the possible backlash from the people who are economically affected by legalization, perhaps voting against this bill. And I hear all sorts of criticisms. You know, they say, oh, 5x5, you know, 25-foot canopy for personal grow is too small, right? Talk about your high class problems, right? We can grow legal weed, but doggone it, we just can't grow enough of it. Jeez. So I really hope we can convert some of the undecideds. You know, they said the women between 30 and 40 with kids. That's what we've always found in our polling at Normal, is the polling for support of marijuana legalization kind of looks like a saddle. You know, when you're talking about young people, it's really up there. And then when they hit middle age and they have kids, it goes down. And then when they become older and their kids leave, it goes back up again. So we've got to really think about how we are going to convince the younger folks with young children that it's in their best interest to legalize marijuana. You know, when we look at all the statistics, California ranks number 32 in teen use of marijuana, and they're going to try to, you know, claim that if we legalize marijuana, more kids will use it. It's going to be a, you know, terrible for the state of California. But note how California's teen use rates went down after medical marijuana, and they've got the least restrictive medical marijuana law of all, and, you know, dispensaries in many strip malls and such that kids walk by, you know, on their way to school. They've grown up around it, and yet the teen rates have declined. I hope we can use those kind of statistics to convince people it's the right thing to do for kids to legalize marijuana in California.
After years of lobbying in the Empire State, activists, including patients, physicians, and medical marijuana advocate groups, New York may soon join 14 other American states with medical cannabis laws. A Senate budget resolution that passed on Monday includes a provision that supports considering the legal sale of medical marijuana in the state budget. Mike Menno of the Marijuana Policy Project believes there is a chance that this language will be included in the final state budget. Senate Democrats estimate that licensing fees from dispensaries could generate up to $15 million that could go towards closing the state's $9 billion budget gap. Meanwhile, medical marijuana bill, Senate Bill 4041B, cleared the Senate Codes Committee today in a bipartisan vote of 11-5. This was the first time that the bill has passed the committee, and it can now go forward towards a full Senate vote. The New York bill would allow patients to use cannabis to treat a serious illness with medical supervision, but a serious illness is defined as a severe, debilitating, or life-threatening condition. Those that qualify, along with their caregivers, would be allowed to possess up to 2.5 ounces of marijuana. Also in New York this week, NBC Universal has released a new poll that reports that half of New Yorkers support legalizing medical marijuana in their state. The report says that 41% are opposed to medical marijuana, and 9% say they don't have enough information to decide. Pollster Steven Greenberg broke down the poll numbers by commenting, quote, "Democrats and independents, downstaters, young, white, and Jewish voters support it. Republicans, upstaters, older voters, and African-American, Catholic, and Protestant voters oppose it. The Latino voters were split down the middle, 49% for and 49% opposed. And the major opposition includes 61% of those who consider themselves conservative, 59% of Republicans, and 48% of those 55 and older. The poll has a margin error of 3 to 4 percentage points.
Carrie, as you were researching this bill, you gave us the limit of 2.5 ounces for possession. Is this one of those bills that doesn't allow for the home grow? Because I didn't hear a plant limit.
I do not believe that this has the home grow provision in it, but yeah. I would have to make sure. I didn't see that either.
I seem to recall when it was first introduced in the assembly that it didn't have home grow, or it did have it and it got taken away. We'll confirm that for listeners out there in New York State, but this seems to be the pattern that's developing in the New England states now with the new medical marijuana law in New Jersey that made it the no garden state, you know, not allowed to have home growing, people forced to have to buy their medicine at a dispensary at black market prices, and I have a huge problem with that. That said, we want medical marijuana to pass wherever it can pass. We feel that opens people's minds up to the notion that it's not the deadly, dangerous drug that, you know, everybody claims it to be, or some people claim it to be. Speaking of upstate, I said there was a less support in upstate New York. I received a phone call today from a fellow in Rome, New York, in upstate New York, who's interested in starting a normal chapter up there. We've got a subchapter up in Rochester as well. Anybody up in upstate New York who wants to get involved, please send me an email at start@normal.org in order to get started with your new chapter. The Empire State Normal, the New York Normal, the statewide chapter, is also looking to get qualified representatives in various cities and towns around the upstate New York area to get involved with this. So please, let's get this passed. One other update, speaking of New York, the Times Square ad is running. And I have yet to have anyone go to Times Square, get a photograph with themselves in front of the billboard. So anybody out there who lives in the New York area, if you can make it to Times Square and get a picture, I would certainly love it. Send the email of the picture to stash@normal.org. Now, to help you out, I just recently received a spreadsheet from Alan St. Pierre, our executive director, with the timing of the ad, when it will be running, because it doesn't run every hour on the hour. It runs 18 times a day, but there's certain blocks of time during the day where it doesn't run at all, like for a 3-hour stretch. So I'd hate to have you out there standing for 3 hours waiting for the thing and not get a picture. I'll publish those times up on our blog at stash.normal.org probably sometime tonight, and we'll see if we can get the pictures based on those times. Now, for our third story today, Carrie's going to sit back for a second while I go over one. This is so new, she didn't get a chance to go over it, but it's from our front page at normal.org, and it was a feature that was on Fox News, of all places, talking about the possibility of a syndrome known as cannabis deficiency or cannabinoid deficiency. This is a quote from the story. It says, "If the idea of having a marijuana deficiency sounds laughable to you, a growing body of science points at exactly such a possibility. Endocannabinoids play a role in the proper appetite, feelings of pleasure and well-being, and memory. Interestingly, cannabis also affects these same functions. Cannabis has been used successfully to treat migraine, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, and glaucoma. So here is the $74,000 question. Does cannabis simply relieve these diseases to varying degrees? Or is cannabis actually a medical replacement in cases of deficient endocannabinoids? The idea of clinical cannabinoid deficiency opens the door to cannabis consumption as an effective medical approach to relief of various types of pain, restoration of appetite in cases in which appetite is compromised, improved visual health in cases of glaucoma, and improved sense of well-being among patients suffering from a broad variety of mood disorders. As state and local laws mutate and change in favor of greater tolerance, perhaps cannabis will find its proper place in the home medicine chest. Well, yeah, that's kind of what we're working on here. That's kind of the point. I think this research is very, very promising, and the idea of an endocannabinoid deficiency makes a lot of sense to me. Because you know how, especially if you're in this movement, you know a lot of people who use cannabis, you realize that there is something different about us. Right. As a people, you know, I think I keep on talking about the cannabis community and I think of us as an actual community. Now, part of that, of course, owes to prohibition. We're outlaws. Right. So we do kind of have to stick together. But I think another part of it does have to do with a certain, you know, innate physical characteristic of so-called stoners that we have that other people don't have. And that is this potential endocannabinoid deficiency. You know, I don't see the same sort of community built around cocaine or heroin or meth, right? You don't talk about the meth community very often. And to some extent, we have it in tobacco. I mean, we see it with cigars, right? You know, the cigar clubs and so on. And we do see it a little bit with alcohol a little bit. But I think cannabis is more of a social thing, and I do think it owes somewhat to us being a little bit different than other people. And maybe it is this cannabinoid deficiency. I know for myself, my use of cannabis, you know, it felt like I had tried alcohol and tobacco and other drugs, but when I tried cannabis, it kind of felt like, wow, this, I finally found the puzzle piece that fits. I finally found the part that was missing. And it has had such a positive impact on my life in so many ways, you know, not just health, but mental health and friendships and all the travel and wonderful things that have happened because of this job. But even without this job, cannabis would still be a large part of my life. I find it works for me. And I find that it works for a lot of you, too. And there's no reason why that should be any of the government's business. So long as we're not hurting anyone else, we're taking a plant that grows naturally out of the ground and using it for our, you know, our personal purposes. That's what we're here for at Normal. Whether you consider your use medical or social or recreational or what have you, it's your right. You know, this country was founded on hemp. And if liberty doesn't mean our ability to control what goes into our bodies, then I don't know what to call it. Speaking of liberty, it's 20 after the hour. Time for us to take a break. So we'll be right back with your Irie Wednesday tune and Johnny Reaper Seed from Iowa. Stick around.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man, the reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
In terms of legalization of drugs, I think that the battle, the war on drugs has been a utter failure.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure.
And I I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws. The war on drugs has been an utter failure.
Normal Show Live, where we don't change our position on decriminalization in an election year.
Welcome back, folks. 22 after the hour. We got your daily Toker Tunes coming up next. Want to remind you to check out normal.org and get involved with your own liberation. NORML.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reaverseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, we go to the heart of the country, Iowa, with our good friend Johnny Reaverseed from the band Johnny Reaverseed and the High Rollers. Johnny, welcome back.
Hey, Russ, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Hey, before we get too far into the intros and stuff, we haven't mentioned your website for a while, and I want folks, if they want to get a hold of the of Johnny Reaverseed music, to be able to do so, so let them know.
Oh, sure. Johnny Reaverseed and the High Rollers. We've got a couple tunes up on iTunes. Just go to iTunes and type in Johnny Reaverseed. That'll get you there. And then we have our MySpace at www.myspace.com/JRSHighRollers. Yeah, sorry about that. And so we've got those two places. You can look us up.
All right. And we've got the official dog of Johnny Reaverseed and the High Rollers in the background, I hear.
Actually, that's Rev Ray's dog. He's on vacation in Arizona, and I'm dog sitting.
Oh, fantastic. Oh, glad to hear it. All right. So
him and my dog are having fun.
Yeah, yeah. Roscoe and Milo over here have their fun, too. So let us know what we got here for a tune for our Irie Wednesday.
Okay, well, this is another one that Tolkien Tam sent my way. This is a band called Good Rats Radio. If you want to dance, groove, or just put yourself in a good mood, the Good Rats Radio from Toronto, Canada has a music that is able to well up the best of vibes and the coldest of hearts. The city streets of Toronto have given the Good Rats Radio an inevitably gritty punk rock sound, but their love for old-time ska and reggae has created a fusion that will keep your fist white, knuckle tight, and your head bumping to the super-heavy bass lines. If your chest isn't bruised from the thumping kick drum or drawn into a trance by the soulful harmonies of the guitar and organ, consider yourself lucky. It'll only be a matter of time until you fall victim to their punk rits reggae sound. The Good Rats are, and I hope I don't butcher these names too bad, Ian Howarth on guitar and vocals, James Pazner on bass, Kevin Mystica on keyboards, Remy Turin on drums, and then horn section we've got Stefan Milo on trombone, Adam Grohl saxophone, and Max Stenutz on trumpet. So today's Irie Toker tune is Man on the Run, which is a song they've entered in the upcoming Marijuana Music Awards, which will be coming up this summer. And you can check out more of Good Rats Radio at myspace.com, the Good Rats Radio, just like it sounds. And you can purchase our music online on iTunes. So I dig this song, Man on the Run. It's hopefully we won't have to be running for much longer. Have a good one, Ross.
All right, thanks, Johnny. This is our tune for Irie Wednesday. Kick it, John. Let's rock out a little here. A little Irie Wednesday right. Music. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
Normal Show Live is brought to you by our advertisers and supported by the generous tax-deductible donations of our listeners. If you'd like to make a monetary donation to the show, visit secure.normal.org/donate. Fill in the dollar amount and specify Normal Show Live in the comments. If you'd like to donate equipment or items to be used for prize promotions on the show, please send them to 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. If you need a receipt for tax deduction purposes, please indicate the value of the items you are donating. Thank you for contributing to the fight for your own freedom.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
Every Wednesday we visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Glad to have you back, Dr. Mitch. How are you? Hello, Dr. Mitch, are you there?
Yeah, having a great day, Russ.
Oh, sorry, I had a little delay there. Is that you that we see in our chat room as well?
Indeed, I finally made it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, we'll get you the questions from the chat room. Before we get to those questions, I wanted to ask you a couple of things. One was a recent paper that I'd seen come through email endorsing cannabinoids as neuroprotectants. Did you see that survey, and what can you tell us about it?
The bottom line is... Can you hear me, Russ?
Yep, we hear you.
The bottom line is cannabinoids make it so that when you burn things in your body, like we all do, they have less of a negative impact. Neuroprotectant really means, hey, you're going to save yourself from damage caused by oxidation. And that's what the cannabinoids do. Vitamin E does it. A whole bunch of things are neuroprotective in that way. And it's just nice to see that the word is getting out on this and showing up time and time again in petri dishes and in rodents across the country and world. And I think soon we'll have data on humans as well.
Oh, excellent. And if you are on the chat window, I do need to remind you to mute your computer there in case we get an echo. Is that what's happening there, Dr. Mitch?
Could be.
Yeah, I've had that happen before when I do the show, and I've got the browser on in the background. There's about a 9-second delay, so it can be really, really hard to talk through. We also talked to you recently about your survey for veterans, and you're taking a look at cannabis and post-traumatic stress disorder. Do you have any new updates on the research on PTSD and cannabis?
I just wanted to emphasize that I thank everyone heartily for participating on that, and we're seeing very impressive expectations of folks who actually have PTSD based on their self-reports, saying that a subset of symptoms in particular really respond well to cannabis. It wouldn't be a giant surprise to our listeners, but irritability, sleep problems, and of all things, problems with memory, problems with having certain sites remind you of military experiences and freaking you out, really seem to improve in response to cannabis. And I'm hoping to have those data written up for publication relatively soon.
Oh, fantastic. I'm going to turn things over to John here. He's got some questions that have built up from the chat room. So, John.
Hey, Dr. Mitch. We have one here from 3-star General Kid and asks, Dr. Mitch, what is the best way to start to talk to your doctor about cannabis?
I can tell you what I did, and that was I walked in with my book under my arm.
There we go. Which one of the books, though?
understanding marijuana with a big five-leafer right on it. And needless to say, the conversation got started pretty easily. I've also heard folks mention that they say they are afraid of alcohol and have turned to alternative recreation, or they mentioned that they grew up in a place where there was a lot of plants and growing and hippies.
Okay. Let's get another question.
This is from Destruction, and asks, Dr. Mitch, now that healthcare is the law of the land, do you think the federal government will ever have control over who gets medical marijuana?
I think we've got a government that's willing to make that a product of the relationship between the patient and the healthcare provider. And I'm optimistic that things are going to stay that way. That's one relationship that has been relatively sacrosanct across the country for, a couple hundred years now.
Let me get to this question here that addresses something I talked about in a previous segment. And this is up on our normal front page as well. And it's the idea of there being an endocannabinoid deficiency syndrome and that some people that use cannabis are merely treating themselves for this deficiency. I know it's a relatively new concept here, but what can you tell us about that?
Bob Malamud has been talking about this for at least the last 5 years, and the bottom line is it's not so much a deficiency as part of the natural variation we see in any evolving species. Some folks have more sensitive and some less sensitive cannabinoid systems. The problem and the irony is folks who don't need extra cannabinoids are the ones who seem to be in charge of making all the laws. If you think about what you were talking about before, Russ, about there's a certain type of person who ends up in the movement, we tend to be the kind of folks who have correlates of cannabis use that we see. We're relatively mellow. We don't particularly need to be the boss of the world. We don't generally care what other people do as long as we get to do what we want. As you can imagine, these are not the kind of people who often find themselves in elected public office. And so we often end up in situations where we have to really motivate to stand up for ourselves to make sure we can get what we need to essentially feed a completely normal nervous system that happens to respond well and may have even evolved in order to interact with the environment in this way and with this plant.
Oh, fantastic. And we've got some more questions from the readers and the listeners in the chat room. John, let's get another one for them.
This one's from NJ Leaper, and they ask, are there any short-term tests for active THC for roadside? And what I think they mean for the police to test for driving while intoxicated.
In fact, the roadside sobriety tests are my favorite. They're much better than any urine screens, which you could essentially pass even though you were high if you hadn't used in the previous 2 weeks, or fail even though you were completely straight if you had happened to use 2 weeks ago. So the roadside sobriety tests are modest adaptations of the ones we already use for alcohol, and some of the more reliable ones require standing on one foot with the other foot extended for 30 seconds, and a few others that are comparable but not exactly the same as the ones we use for alcohol. And I'm encouraging law enforcement to rely on these rather than anything as invasive as urine or blood screen, because they're much more accurate for what we really want to predict, and that's impairment of driving. We've seen data that show even Benadryl and over-the-counter antihistamines can impair driving, and folks who are on those tend to fail these tests as well. I'd much rather go with a behavioral test than any kind of expensive chemical thing we've come up with so far.
Yeah, I'm all for testing for impairment. The problem is testing my pee doesn't show anyone that I'm impaired or not, so I always had a problem with those tests. We have another question here coming from BMath, wants to know is whether or not cannabis use has any effect on exercising or physical performance.
As it turns out, there's a very vocal subset of winter sports fanatics who claim to me that they're much more willing to take risks in skiing and generally less sensitive to pain during these short duration kind of bouts like fast downhill and things like that. And needless to say, some snowboarders swear by it as well. But we don't have any compelling empirical data, not because it's not there so much as we just haven't looked.
Okay. And I'd heard With respect to the fighters in mixed martial arts, when I was covering the Toby Greer story, that they'd actually floated the notion that cannabis in mixed martial arts might be a performance enhancing substance. One, because they'd be better able to resist the pain of being hit in the head, and number two, that it would—it's enough of an anti-inflammatory that they'd be more flexible and better able to withstand joint locks and all of the things they do in that jiu-jitsu. Any truth to that idea?
I know some folks from the Gracie School in Los Angeles who would kind of guffaw at that. Really need a lot of rapid reaction time in complex situations. So it would either require an incredible amount of intoxicated practice for this to be a performance-enhancing drug, or it would actually be a performance-impairing drug. However, if you said that the winner of the match gets a donut, maybe it would be motivating.
Yeah, maybe so. All right, John, let's get some more questions from the chat room.
Cameron Feld asks, what type, indica versus sativa, would be best for joint and body pain? And if you could recommend any specific strains?
As it turns out, we're hard-pressed to find pure indicas and sativas, as Danny has said time and again. I think he may still be in the chat room. For a while there, at least in some of the Los Angeles dispensaries, there was one called A10 that looked like it was primarily indica and did seem to be popular among folks who reported joint pain. Unfortunately, we're in a predicament where you really have to go with trial and error on this.
Okay, we've got a question here from the NorCal kid who wants to know, do endocannabinoids or cannabinoids have a known relationship with cortisols? Are there any hormone relationships between the cannabinoids and the body?
If so, they would be extremely far downstream. So some cortisols are actually a sign of stress, and you could imagine, hey, if this is going to decrease your stress, you might have sort of a blunted cortisol response under those circumstances. But the difference between an acute response and a chronic response would have to be played in, so this research hasn't been done very well. My wife, of all people, is actually looking into some of the reactivity of cortisol and salivary amylase, another stress hormone in the saliva, and as those data come out, I'll be happy to let folks know.
Excellent. Let's get another question, John.
I actually have a question for you, Dr. Mitch, and it's related to me. You know, sometimes I'm in the ER, sometimes, you know, before surgery, they often ask me if I use any street drugs. Is it okay for me to withhold that information from them?
As it turns out, I'd prefer that you say so, in part because I want to normalize this, but also because there are small subsets of pharmaceuticals that we're discovering do interact with cannabis. Right now, it's not a drug that's involved so much in the emergency room, but another room entirely, the bedroom. It looks like Viagra actually interacts in a way with cannabis that it might be, shall we say, counterproductive. The enzyme required for breaking down Viagra is interfered with by cannabis, and so it ends up working, shall we say, better than it might.
Better than it might, you say? An enhancement to Viagra?
Well, unfortunately, it would mean longer duration, and that's often not what anybody really wants to experience.
All right. We'll leave that up to our listeners to decide. Let's go back to getting some more questions here. Let's see here. Looking down. Seaweedy has a question. Interested in what you think of open patents on cannabinoid medicines to protect marijuana from a pharmaceutical monopoly?
I am generally a big fan of open patents regardless. I mean, I realize there are lots of companies that pay a lot for the development of drugs, and if they want to have the rights to it, that certainly ought to be negotiated. But here's something that, in all honesty, grows out in the field. It seems completely unfair that there would be something like that, unless it was going to be some kind of proprietary blend that someone had developed and worked very hard on. But even then, it's sort of a hard thing to defend legally. My brother-in-law is a lawyer in this domain, and I can definitely ask him.
Okay. Let's get another chat question.
We have another one from Real Ohio, and he asks, previously you'd mentioned that cannabis becomes toxic at a level of about 2 pounds, and what's the nature of this toxicity?
what's funny is that's actually an estimate based on lethality, and it's only an extrapolation of data with rodents. As you can imagine, most folks would be far, far, far too uninterested in cannabis before they got to the 2-pound mark and probably just recommend a nap. And I think that that sedation would be about as toxic as anybody would really get.
Okay. A couple more questions. Got time for maybe a couple more here. Question about inhalation and whether or not there's a specific method of inhalation of cannabis vapor or smoke that is more efficient. The writer here says that, you know, we see some people who breathe in and breathe out, some people who mix, you know, an oxygen with their, you know, they kind of breathe in regular air as they're taking the hit, other people that hold it for a long, long time. What's the best way to inhale?
As it turns out, these long lung buster hits that you hold for every second you can don't seem to get folks any higher and tend to give cannabis smoke an opportunity to leave deposits on the lung tissue. So as much as it feels like you're actually getting higher because you've held your breath so long, do the same without any smoke in there, and you'll notice you also feel kind of high, too. It's really not that THC is getting absorbed more, because THC absorbs relatively quickly when it makes contact with capillaries, so you're really just increasing your opportunity for respiratory complications and other hassles if you're using smoke. For vapor, this isn't an issue, but again, there's no need to hold it till you're blue in the face, because the THC is absorbed so readily. All these other questions, unfortunately, have never been investigated empirically because there's just no funding for that kind of work in the lab.
Right. One more question we have time for. Go ahead, John.
I think we have time for one more. L. Angel asks, what's a good strain for migraines, and are there any strains that may help with organ inflammation?
Oh, I've had just informal reports from some folks who tend to like the sour lemon diesel on this, but I know folks who like the sour lemon diesel for damn near anything. So that would be a certainly one to try. I'm hoping that you know, there'll be a day where we can really turn to individual strains and have a whole list of symptoms that seem to respond well to them and go from there. But right now our hands are tied because of this horrible prohibition.
Yeah, well, we'll get it legal in California. We can start doing some better research and get some specific strains and guides out there for the people. I know the folks at the Harborside Health Clinic, they put out a calendar that has a few strains listed and what they're good for, what people have reported they're good for. Maybe that would be a place for people who are looking for some reference. Maybe try Harborside. I think even maybe Ed Rosenthal, maybe some of his books might have some recommendations as well. But again, like you say, Dr. Mitch, we don't really have research on this. It's all anecdotal.
Exactly. That's our predicament.
All right. Well, Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us every Wednesday for our Cannabis Science segment. And are you going to hang out in the chat room for a little bit?
Oh, I got to check on my daughter, but I should be in for at least 10 more minutes.
All right. Thanks for joining us, and thanks for your questions, everybody. We're right back after these messages.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
Hey everybody, it's your favorite giveaway guy, Gene Blinkendale, here with a fabulous new contest for all you tokers and tokettes out there. We've got four t-shirts from homegrown.com to give away to the first four listeners who send us an email. But wait,
It's not that easy. Your email needs to contain 3 different responses from your state or federal elected officials on the subject of marijuana law reform, all dated after March 1st, 2010. Send in your 3 responses in an email to stash@normal.org with the subject line Homegrown T-Shirt Contest, and you could be a winner. By writing your elected officials, someday we all could be winners. I'm your giveaway guy, Gene Blinkendale, reminding you that there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, but a friend with weed is a friend indeed.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
That's right. It's time to check Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Lots of meetings going on today, Wednesday, March 24th, a land use and housing meeting in San Diego, California at the Council Committee Room. Also, a CPC meeting at the Barrio Theater in San Diego. For information on the San Diego events, check out normalsc.org. That's Normal Southern California, normalsc.org. Also in California, CSU Fresno Normal's having their meeting and a symposium at the Family Food and Science Building on the CSU Fresno campus. That's room 216A. On Thursday, March 25th, we've got a University of New Hampshire Normal meeting at the MUB 334 room. And in Hollywood, Florida, a Hollywood Live event organized with Normal of South Florida and People United for Medical Marijuana, PUFM. You can call Karen at 954-303-9254 for tomorrow's event in Hollywood, Florida. On Friday, March 26th, an MMTF meeting in San Diego at the City Council Committee Room. Again, normalsc.org for information. This Saturday, March 27th, Oregon Normal holds their twice-monthly cardholders meeting. We will be broadcasting it here on Normal Show Live. It's at noon Pacific. The largest Normal chapter on the planet will be meeting, giving away free marijuana. That's right, giving away free plants, free medicine, and other stuff in their meeting. Check it out at our website, live.normal.org, noon Pacific on Saturday. There's also a March 27th meetup in Central Ohio for Central Ohio Normal in Worthington. Check out ohionormal.org for information. Kansas City Normal's having their public meeting on Saturday at the Westport Coffee House, kcnormal.org, or dial 888-KC-NORMAL for information. For all of these events, with more links and websites and email addresses and phone numbers, check out the Normal Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar. All right, we're going to bring Cannabis Carry back up on the line here because we had a story that we both thought was very interesting, and we wanted to save it to the end of the show so I could rant a little bit about it. So, Carry, welcome back.
Thanks, Russ. I just wanted to say the NFL is thrilled that the 2010 draft represents one of the deepest and most promising pools of collegiate talent in years, and Sports Illustrated is reporting that in addition to the vast potential of this year's draft class, numerous NFL personnel evaluators have told them they are concerned about the increased number of prospects who have a history of marijuana use in their background. Many of the best talent in this year's draft pool have acknowledged a failed drug test for marijuana in college in their interviews with team executives. The story came out today was from an interview with head coaches, general managers, and 2 other high-level club personnel. One NFL scout has said that 10 or 11 players who carry first-round draft grades on their board this year have been red flagged for marijuana use in college, an estimate echoed by 2 clubs' head coaches. Another NFL head coach estimated that 1/3 of the players on his club's draft board has some sort of history with marijuana use and would require an extra level of evaluation as part of the pre-draft scouting process. Another veteran club personnel who didn't want to be identified said, quote, marijuana use is almost epidemic, with more guys having tested positive for marijuana at some point in their college background than I can ever remember. It's almost as if we were having to figure out a new way to evaluate it as part of the character and background report because it's so prevalent. You just can't throw out that many guys. You have to go case by case and do your homework on them. NFL club officials in this case are only referencing failed drug tests administered by the prospect's college that wind up on their background report. NFL scouting, in many cases, players are much more open to admitting to past marijuana use or experimentation in college as part of their pre-draft interviews with NFL teams. One NFL head coach said that this is an era where some states have decriminalized medical marijuana use, and he's had interviewed potential draft picks who didn't even seem to recognize their marijuana smoking constituted drug use in the eyes of the NFL. In one sense, it may be a generational issue where the perception of the younger players about marijuana is different from the generation that created the coaches and owners. One thing for sure is that the NFL will have many discussions about cannabis use and potential players in the upcoming season.
Well, you know, I love the football. I'm a big Green Bay Packers fan and all that. But it's kind of interesting in these draft boards now, they are having to think about not counting marijuana use as something negative about their character, right? Because before, you know, oh, caught with pot, obviously a thug, obviously, you know, a lawbreaker, a drug user, right? We can't have them. But they're finding in their experience over the past 5 years that marijuana use, if it's not a character problem, it seems to be indicative of a higher caliber of player, to pardon a pun. I just went over to celebstoner.com. They keep a list of sports figures that are caught with drugs or marijuana. And I just made a quick list of some of the players who've had, you know, some marijuana-related incidences. Some of these I just got right off the top of my head. I mean, Ricky Williams, the running back. Everybody thinks of Ricky Williams, right? He's come back to the NFL and had some of his best rushing totals in the last season. Santonio Holmes, Plaxico Burress, both wide receivers who caught the game-winning catches in the last two Super Bowls or two previous Super Bowls, whatever it was. But yeah, the all-stars right here. And from the Minnesota Vikings, Percy Harvin, he came into the draft the previous year with the marijuana on his record from Florida, and then goes on to join the Minnesota Vikings. And the Vikings were only able to get a hold of him because his stock had fallen so low because of the marijuana incident. Other than that, he was going to be a, you know, number three, number four draft pick overall. He goes on to become the Rookie of the Year, Offensive Rookie of the Year, and have a wonderful season receiving passes from the quarterback formerly known as Brett Favre. Wide receiver DeSean Jackson from the Eagles. And it's not just limited to the offensive players either. I got defensive end Jaquan Parker, Jonathan Babineau, Sean Ellis, Ed Johnson, Derek Martin, Willie Andrews. If we start listing wide receivers, Jimmy Smith, Terry Glenn, quarterbacks, Michael Vick, Quincy Carter, running backs, Marshawn Lynch, Kevin Falk, Jameel Cook. I mean, you could pretty much put together a complete NFL team of people who have tested positive or admitted to using marijuana, and that team would probably be a playoff caliber team. So it's up to the owners here in the NFL to start making the realization that cannabis use is not detrimental to a football player, not detrimental to their skills, and definitely not indicative of any sort of character flaw that the player might be bringing into the league. Definitely not. NFL and other leagues need to start taking marijuana out of their drug testing scenarios and out of giving any sort of punishments for the players that choose to use marijuana. It's the safer choice. It's no surprise that these athletes who are honed to the peak of physical perfection, whose bodies are their paycheck, it's no surprise that they choose marijuana over alcohol or any of these more harmful drugs. Let's just let them grow up, let these men be men, let them use their marijuana and entertain us on the field. That's what we really care about. Well, I'm Radical Russ. For everyone here at Normal.org, Ganja John, our engineer, and Cannabis Carry, thanks for joining us for our show. We'll be back tomorrow. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. Out on our blog, stash.normal.org. Send me an email, stash@normal.org. Follow me on Twitter, @RadicalRuss. See you next time.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. Take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.